Welcome back to the Paranorm Girl podcast. I am your host, Kristen. Today's guest is a producer, inventor, and wildlife researcher. His innovative approach to the mysteries of our world, natural phenomena, and technology has paved the way to some incredible discoveries. And thanks to his production of well-known visual and audio programs and his inclusion of science into the material, many have been greatly inspired and encouraged to take part and to dig deeper into the mystery of the Sasquatch phenomenon. It has also made my guest's name synonymous with the ever-expanding field of research and the ongoing pursuit for answers. Most well known for shows like Monster Quest and documentaries like Sasquatch Legend Meets Science, he also runs Hangar One Publishing and the Untold Radio Network. Please enjoy my conversation with Doug Hajcek. My guest is Mr. Doug Hajcek. Thank you so much, Doug, for joining me today.
Hey, how are you?
I am well. You hear it in my voice. We talked about it pre-recording, but I'm sick today. But you know what? Having you here with me now, being able to talk with you, just makes me feel so much better already.
Yeah. No. You are not alone. A lot of people are sick, and even my granddaughter was sick with some kind of grunge. Who knows? It's. I have a feeling there's some more weird grunges heading our way in the near future.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Yeah, they aren't pulling any punches. They just seem to be coming out of left field. And yeah. Grunge is a good word for it.
Well, when you have 300 biolabs all over working on enhancing viruses,
yeah,
what do you think's going to happen? You know, it's just there's going to be accidents.
What do they say? That they work on the viruses to find the cure? Is that the play?
Yes, that is the justification, and I get it. I get it. And
something's happening.
But you know, there's no free lunch in life, eh?
That is true. That is true. And you know what? You are a good example of no free lunch in life. You are quite the busy fellow. You have been doing this for decades. You do so much. I was going to tell you, you know, because I do a little bit of prep work on my guests, and you, sir, are one hard man to nail down. You do everything.
Yeah. You know, I started out as a wildlife researcher, and then I thought, oh, how can I get somebody to pay for all this wildlife research I'm doing? I'm going to get involved in TV and let the TV stations pay for it. So that was my motivation for getting into the television business, and it came too easy. I thought, oh, this is going to be a year's battle. No, no, no. First day I tried, literally the next day I had a meeting with a head of a network, and they got the green light, and I'm like, what did I get myself into? And so now I got to produce these TV shows, and blah, blah, blah. One thing led to another. Next thing you know, I'm doing that for 8 years. And of course, I had to sell the advertising, do the media kits, write the scripts, edit, shoot. And so it was quite an endeavor. But then it led to, you know, working for Animal Planet and doing a lot of bear research and having them fund a lot of really cool bear research, which was really cutting edge back in the day, where we were trying to film like an entire hibernation over the winter. And then filmed the birth of the first wild black bears and on and on. I mean, all sorts of stuff I did. But and then it led to me, because of that, going up to the Arctic to do wildlife research and coming upon footprints with two other people in the boat, right? Uh-huh. And so we're up in the Arctic in the Northwest Territories, after a six-hour flight from a remote area into a more remote area. And then we were probably 20 miles from our camp, and out of the water were footprints coming out of the water onto a very beautiful sand beach. Up in the Arctic, it's almost like the Caribbean. You know, you have these sand eskers and sand dunes. And in fact, those are the kind of places that if we do take a wheel plane, we land in the sand dunes. And it's quite a wild ride to do a landing up there. But in this case, we had taken a float plane, and I'll tell you why that's important. So we find these footprints. They're coming in the sand, in the crystal clear. I mean, absolutely beautiful. And so we follow him up to the pea gravel before it transitions into the moss. You know, you've heard about the, I don't know if you've seen this thick moss that starts growing in northern Minnesota and mm-hmm. goes all the way up into the Arctic. But it's thick and it's like sponge. And there, as it transitioned into the moss, there was a little stand of stunted trees, very small, like 7 foot tall, because it's kind of at the end of their range. So there's only a few trees up there. And so the footprints came right to a tree trunk. And there in the front of the tree trunk was a steep footprint. And right behind the tree trunk, about 4 feet away, was another footprint deep, which meant it stepped over the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah. You can imagine the, you know, being a wildlife researcher, and I knew there weren't bear, I knew there weren't polar bear tracks, and I'm going, and then my buddy who was with me goes, "We need to leave now."
Oh.
That's the first words out of his mouth. "We just need to leave now." And I said, no. I said, "We got to keep following these things." So we get past the trees, and there in the horizon, you could see the tundra rolling off way off in the distance. God knows how many miles we could see. And there were those footprints you could see going off into the horizon.
Whoa.
And I went, okay, something made those footprints. This is not some hoax or a joke. And we're in the middle of nowhere. And so I came back home obsessed. Literally obsessed for answers, because I knew they were Bigfoot footprints. They had to be. They matched the, you know, they were huge human-like footprints that probably, you know, we were estimating 12 even to 1500 pounds, maybe up even to a ton that this thing weighed, because like Rick was with, and he weighed over 300, excuse me, my voice, he weighed over 300 pounds, and he leaped off a rock, couldn't even dent the soil.
Oh, wow.
So, and then leaping off a rock, you figure he put down at least 800 pounds of force.
Yeah.
Wasn't as the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And these footprints were fresh. And it was kind of raining, light rain at the time. So the soil wasn't even dry. So to give you an example of, you know, how big this thing might have been, we don't know. We can only estimate. But it was interesting because I just interviewed Fred Sowell, and he was describing a creature that was 13 foot tall that he had seen. And so when you get up into the Arctic, I think Bergman's rule mm-hmm. kind of takes over, where the bigger body mass aids in survival. So animals just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger as they go north. Like our white-tailed deer here are much bigger than they are in Texas.
Right.
So anyhow, so that changed my life. It was a paradigm-changing moment for me. I get back. I got a hold of Peter Byrne right away. And he was, you know, probably the most famous researcher back at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is about 1991. There was really not much I could do at that time. So eventually I'd heard about the BFRO, and I got a hold of them, and I got a hold of Matt Moneymaker, got Matt on the phone, and he talked my ear off, answered all my questions. He was just really amazing. And he flew up to see me because he knew I was a filmmaker. Cause I'm like, Matt, I really want to do a science film, because all the stuff you're telling me, I'd never heard of.
Yeah.
You know, that like they're all over the U.S., probably all over the Arctic, anywhere there's woods, water, and hills, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, or we have at least two of those things. And so I just wanted to get information out. And so I got obsessed with that. And then me and Matt pitched to all sorts of networks back in the day, Legend Meet Science. Everybody turned it down, you know, like who would be interested in that topic? And finally, John Ford at Discovery, my agent, ran into John Ford at Discovery and had pitched it to him. And he just looked at my agent and went, "I'll take it. Let's do it." And so that was the moment that literally everything after that was born, because of John's open mind, And he was very, he was a very old school executive producer at Discovery. And he was basically, I think, responsible for that, you know, the start of Discovery Channel. But anyhow, so we went on and we did that, and the rest is kind of history. And then I went on to pitch a TV series that no one's ever heard of. Did you know there was the first Bigfoot TV series ran about 2000? It was a series just on Bigfoot, but no one knows about it. Because it ran on the Outdoor Life Network out of Canada. And the show was called Mysterious Encounters. And so I did that show, but it allowed me to practice with all sorts of technology out in the field. That we had tons of sponsors. It was the first time thermal cameras were ever used on television. We had drones. We had helium balloons with gimbals and thermal cams that cost $55,000 back in those days. We had to make our, there was no such thing as even camera traps at that point. We had to make our own because it didn't exist yet. You know, there were, you know, these game trail cameras you post put on trees that hunters use. They did not even exist yet. So we had to make our own. The backpacks that a lot of people saw in Finding Bigfoot was an invention of mine back for that show. You know, that with the ones that show the person walking and out ahead of them, that those things were used in two different shows, Finding UFOs and Finding Bigfoot. And then eventually I started pitching a show about Gigantopithecus, which was one explanation for the Bigfoot mystery, right? Because if you think about it, there are no fossils of any animals in North, any modern animals in North America.
Yep.
We have no fossils of deer, buffalo, fox. I mean, any modern animal, nothing exists. But here we had fossils of a big giant ape that lived in Asia that could have easily walked over the land bridge that existed for that. So if you transport that creature, that giant 11-foot ape, into America or the North America, you might have, you know, basically proof of a Bigfoot. Excuse me. So anyhow, so I started pitching that. Nobody was interested. Nobody was interested. Then one day I was watching TV and there was a King Kong commercial that aired because Peter Jackson was coming out with a new King Kong movie. And I saw that and I went, oh, I have an idea. I'll name it The Real King Kong. Giganto, The Real King Kong. So I called my agent up that night and told him, I said, I'm going to redo the art. So then he was at a convention and he sold it instantly, you know, based on that name. I sold it to or NBC said they wanted it. Mm-hmm. Long story short, it ended up getting vetoed by the president of NBC. And then I think NBC had a stake in History Channel. They called History. History said, yeah, well, you know, we'll do it. So I produced it for them. A lot of people have not seen Giganto, The Real King Kong, because it's not on YouTube and it's not for sale anywhere. But it's one of my best documentaries I've ever done.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to look for it.
I can send you a director's cut.
Oh,
I'll do that. I'll send you a director's cut.
That would be
cut.
Amazing. Yeah, I'd love to see it.
But it's weird because it's not, I don't know what happened with that show. But so the point was it broke records in the ratings. I believe it went 4 times over their highest ratings ever on History. Mm-hmm. They called me up the next day after they got the overnight ratings and they said, can you do more of these? And I'm like, yeah, of course. And so using that same kind of science formula, because there was a lot of science in it. I mean, that was the first time Giganto teeth actually got a hold of Giganto teeth, and we tested them for DNA and, you know, carbon dated them and did all sorts of really cool first time things with the teeth. And so then we worked out a deal and Monster Quest was born. And so that kind of brings us to today.
Yeah. Whoa.
So you asked a loaded question.
I guess I did, but that was awesome. And that's kind of, that was something I was going to ask you about. I wanted to see that journey of like, you know, what brought us to present day.
Yeah.
There's a lot involved when you're in production and doing that side of it. I come from an acting background. I do have a filmmaking background too. Mm. You know, I've done dabbled a little bit. So it's really interesting here, but like, at the start of all of this, I was just so curious about like those days before you approached them and pitched the show and got that green light. Like you said, it was easy, but no national network show is born in a vacuum. Like,
no.
Where were you at? You were a filmmaker at that point? Like you had been studying?
Yeah, because I had my first TV show in the '80s on the air. And by the way, that show is still on the air. It's a series and still on, it's still going. And it's now on the second generation. The host, Ron Shera, it's now his daughter has taken over.
Oh.
So my first show is still on the air, which is like episode 1500 or some damn thing. Back from 85
wow.
is when the show started. So that's kind of cool. But as you can see, it's everything in life is like a little rung in a ladder, right? You can't get to part two until you do part one, right? And so I like to tell people that if you want success, you just got to do whatever it takes, because eventually you're going to meet the right person, the right thing's going to come up, and you've paid your dues and you're ready for that next rung in the ladder. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not ready for it, you know, you're just going to fail to begin with because it's unnatural. So I didn't produce like Bigfoot programming because I wanted to make money. I produced Bigfoot programming because I wanted answers and needed the money to spend on the science, because labs don't work for free. Scientists generally, this is, you know, they don't make that much money to begin with, and they're going to be damned if they're going to take 2 weeks of their time, you know, because they can't afford it and not get paid. And so everything I've done paid for, you know, travel, expeditions, equipment, technology. And so that's what kind of separates Monster Quest. And I think people are sensing like, why is Monster Quest different? Because it wasn't produced by some guy at some, you know, production company said, hey, that's a popular topic. Let's do that. That's not how it happened. I did those shows because I wanted answers. You know, it's why I said yes. It's why I worked so, I mean, Monster Quest took up my entire life. I gave up so much and sacrificed so much for that show. Started at like 8:30 in the morning, would go all day until about 4:30 in the morning. I'd get just, you know, three and a half hours sleep and up again. And that's 7 days a week in order to get that show done. Because we were even doing double seasons, where it was 26 one-hour docs in a year. And it's, yeah. I mean, that's like a grueling, grueling schedule. And if you've ever done a network show, there's so many deliverables and legal things and the edits have to be perfect. And then it's got to go through the technical departments to make sure every pixel is in place and on and on. So it really becomes an interesting journey. You know, it's a sacrifice.
Yeah.
So, and now I've decided, I took a long break because of the burnout from filmmaking. But now I've undertaken Legend Meets Science 2 completely independently for the reason I don't have a deadline. It's the first production ever in my life. I don't have a clock, you know, or a calendar going, you have to, you know, present your evidence on this date because mm-hmm. the clock ran out. I can wait for the science to be done correctly. Mm-hmm. So people have to be patient for Legend Meets Science 2 to come out. But I am working on it very hard each week. We just did a big shoot, for instance, where for the first time we regressed hypnotically a bunch of double witnesses to see if any new information could come out. As an example, that's the last shoot that we did. And you know, we've done things like LIDAR drone the entire Freeman film site up in mm-hmm. Up at Deduck Springs to determine the exact size of the Freeman creature. and to get the whole layout. So, I mean, to take a giant drone that's about $8,000 an hour, you know, fly this huge LiDAR drone and map out the entire mountain, that stuff costs money, you know, and it took a lot of people and blah, blah, blah. But those are the kinds of things that we're doing. So I hope when it comes out, people will be like, oh, this was really worth it.
Yeah.
Because well, we're gonna we have a lot of new answers.
Oh yeah, yeah, and are you introducing a lot with in any new DNA stuff? Because I know that stuff's advancing
absolutely
constantly. Awesome.
Yeah, DNA is just exponentially. Every day I wait, actually gets better. It's going to get to the point where we're going to all have. You know, we all have a printer on our desks now. Some point within probably 10 years or less, we're all going to have a DNA machine on our desktop. You know, that's how cheap it's and it's getting better and better. And, you know, everything's getting just smaller and easier and easier. Where they're solving 50-year-old crimes like nothing right now.
You know,
from old skin cells that were on some clothing that's been stored for the last 50 years. They're now finding those people and putting them in jail, even though they're 80, 90 years old. They were a serial killer and got away with it. All these years, they're catching them now.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of cold case things happening. And I'm kind of, in fact, I had a meeting yesterday with one of the people that work for one of these really high-end DNA companies that's, you know, going after criminals that have gotten away with murder literally for 50 years. That's how good it's getting. And then with the GenBanks, they're getting better and better, of course. With everybody volunteering, you know, donating DNA. We're going to be covering 24 brand new categories.
Wow.
In Legend of So people go, well, how is that possible? How are 24 new categories? What do you mean, pieces of evidence? No, categories of evidence. So,
well, it's really good to hear that, well, all of the stuff that's going to be coming in Legend Meets Science 2, but that DNA testing analysis has gotten easier, it's gotten cheaper, because we would have had answers to not just the Bigfoot mystery, but, you know, like some things with UFOs too. You know, there's stuff that's been collected with that as well. A long time ago, it was a wall that people just kept running into, and we would have just been able to answer the question right then and there, instead of, you know, not collecting it or having to throw it out because there's human contamination or whatever the reason. That'll be really, really cool to see.
Well, that's one of the obviously challenges of any close relative in trying to get DNA, because they don't get a full sequence. They can always take the ignore any junk that dropped to the bottom or that they couldn't match, and just say, well, this human genes in here must be contamination. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you got to remember, I mean, every hominid is contaminated with each other. Gorillas are contaminated with the human DNA too. I mean, there's no end to it. Or are we contaminated with gorilla DNA? We're all related. And so the key is to get the full genome, or so much that then now we'll look at the stuff that drops that doesn't match, which may only be a few genes. You know, it may not be this giant thing. You know, we've already had gotten DNA up at Snow Grove where there was we didn't get too many base pairs, but we got enough to where there were a few that matched chimpanzee. It's like, well, what is that doing up? And, you know, there's a few genomes that are divergent in chimps over humans. And we happened to nail a few of those in Ontario. Well, what's that happening up in, you know, why in Ontario? And then, of course, you have to redo it. You have to have enough material to redo it to prove this is really a thing and it wasn't some other kind of mix up. So it's a challenge trying to get DNA off an unknown hominid. Yeah, it's really tough. It's a humanoid.
It is. Yes. We are all related on some level. So I saw briefly a Kickstarter for Legend Meets Science 2. Is that still open? Can people still?
Yes, it still is. Okay. And you know, our well is just about dry. Our last shoot, we had to spend, it was $14,000 when all the bills came in for the flights and the hotels and the food and the blah, 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 you know, just to get people up here for this. And then, of course, for the therapist that did the regression and the hip, you know, everybody has to be paid. Yeah. And we do everything as cheap as we can. We had a fixer that worked for free to look for the nicest but cheapest hotel in the area that people could, you know, we do everything we can to save money. But yeah, our well is about dry again, and we need, we've got many more shoots to do. Okay. We figure we're just probably crossed the halfway point, and they can just go to Hangar One Publishing, and there's the Legend Meets Science, and they can still get involved with all the benefits of, you know, getting the credits and getting merch and all sorts of cool things to fund Legend Meets Science. Because you gotta remember, in Monster Quest, I wouldn't say it was not a limited budget, but I had enough. I never had to worry about the money. Mm-hmm. Where things are so expensive nowadays, and we're not doing this on the cheap. We want to present a really beautiful, you know, well-produced doc. So yeah, they can feel free to donate.
All right, listeners, you heard him. Go donate. We got to help him get this finished. We all want to see it. Real quick here, let's jump back a little bit to, you said that your first encounter, what set you off on this obsession, this path with Bigfoot and other mysteries, you know, that kind of dominoed into itself, were these footprints. Did you said, okay, that must be Bigfoot. So you were aware of Bigfoot at that time.
Sure.
What were your beliefs leading up to that? What did you think of that?
Well, that's a good question. Okay, it starts out, I'm in first grade. and there is a magazine, I think it was Boy's Life or God, with the Patterson creature photo on it. Mm-hmm. And I see that in the library, and of course I grab that. I remember yanking it out of my buddy's hand. It's like, no. So I looked at that, and within that 3-second rule, even at a young age, as a kid, I realized that was a real creature. I could tell. I grew up in an era of fakey monsters, you know, melodramas and shows like Lost in Space that had lots of money, but you could tell they were costumes. I looked at that and I went, that's not a costume, even at a young age. And so that, I was interested in it. And I remember reading about Bob Gimlin and Roger, and, you know, just the whole thing just made sense. And then when I finally saw the film and I went, there's no way that's a suit. I could see muscles. It's just, you know, when you see reality, you know, it's reality. Mm-hmm. And there was no doubt in my mind. And so they just kind of put it in that kind of category. But then when I was about 22, I was up hunting with my cousins and my uncle up in northern Minnesota. My uncle put me on a deer stand about a quarter mile away from anybody else's. It's still dark. And right when the sun, which is barely, I mean, you just barely make out images, I hear chest beating, which I knew was not a grouse. It was loud. I mean, I could feel the reverberations in my body. And just this boom, 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 boom. And I went, what in the world? And I remember just freezing on my deer stand. And then there was this horrible stench that came over me. You know, it was so bad I had to cover my nose, my mouth. And then it went away as quick as it came. And I went, I don't know if I really thought Bigfoot at that time, but when I went back to camp to meet for lunch, where everybody had to redo a safety meeting and re-meet again, every single person in our hunting party had the same experience. So whatever it was made the rounds to every deer stand and did a little intimidation thing. And of course, years later, I realized where the area was. There's been numerous sightings. It's up by Orr, Minnesota. And In fact, me and my cousin were still just talking about it, even though that happened many, many years ago. And so that you just put that in your gray basket, you know, it's just kind of sitting there. And so when I saw those footprints, I was kind of already prepared mentally, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, something about you that is abundantly clear to me, Doug, is you have this ability of noticing things that others don't. Seeing the thing that others are going to look by, such as the footprints. Yeah. Other people might have seen those footprints clear as day and, you know, maybe just not seen them or not noticed them or seen them and said, oh, that's cool. I'm going to go get a sandwich, you know, like just not. But you notice these things and then you're compelled to act on it, to do something about it.
Yeah, that's true. I get called, like I have attention deficit problems, but I don't think it's that. I think I just get really curious. When I was a kid, I drove my parents crazy. I remember just the first time I was taken to Lake Superior, which I ended up doing a ton of Lake Superior research as I got older. Seeing just a guy real, I'd never seen anybody fish before, and I was really little. I was probably 4 years old. And I still remember his minnow being reeled back to the shore, and I could see it just under the surface of the water, like an inch under the water. And I said to my dad, I go, oh, does he got one? Does he have one? Because I saw his bait. My dad laughed. He goes, no, that's his bait. And I went, bait? What? You know, it's just, even at a young age, I was just like asking him all these questions about fishing. And of course, now I do a lot of fishing. I've done a lot of trophy fishing all over the world. But I started doing research. I wanted answers of what's below Lake Superior. What goes on when no one's around? What happens at the bottom of Lake Superior in this beautiful gin clear lake? No one had ever done any, like, put cameras at the bottom. And, you know, and so I built the Benthic Explorer, which was the world's first, certainly underwater webcam. But I also had a lot of scientific experiments on it. I was really curious about the pull of the moon on freshwater lakes, how that, you know, if that affects the oceans, it must affect freshwater lakes. And I'd heard it was called sage, but I wanted to see it. I wanted to visualize, how can I visualize, how can I see this tide? I want to see it somehow. How can I do it? So I invented these, this rod with these floating tubes of plastic, and all I had to do was put a camera on it so I could watch these tubes lock into a position. I put a gauge on it, so now I could see these tubes. Oh, between this type of moon, whatever, and everything goes, the water is all getting sucked, you know, in an easterly direction for 4 hours. And then, you know, so we could track visually all of the sage. Had never been done, never been seen. And I'm like, well, why doesn't anybody know any of these things? It's not that difficult, you know?
Yeah.
So I've always been amazed at during my whole life of how many answers there are not.
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody listening to this now in the future, if you're a kid, oh my God, there is just jillions and jillions of questions that you can even get answers to with very little money, and even at a young age, you can be a citizen scientist. There's so many things we don't know anything about, you know.
Yeah,
just
get
creative and try to get answers on whatever you're curious about. So that's
Well, and that speaks to the way I think your brain works too. You take thinking outside of the box to a whole other level. Like I mentioned in your bio, you are an inventor. You literally create new systems, new ways of doing things, like the Lake Superior, that setting up that camera system. I didn't know this. You captured the first video of a giant squid in its natural environment. You caught that video because of the camera system that you created.
Right. Yeah. It was just once again, it was that kind of that rung in the ladder. I was up in the Arctic again, and we were trying to do get footage of a giant lake trout. I had seen a 6-foot, can you imagine a 6-foot long trout? I saw one with my own eyes in the gin clear waters, and we were at Knowlton Lake, and it was at the mouth of the Windy River, right? And so I see this thing coming up, chasing a 30-pound trout, which is a big trout. It's about 44 inches long, right? 4 foot. But I see this thing that's six foot plus. And I thought, well, how is that possible? Why would this one fish be big? And these other fish are big, but not like this monster I saw. And I looked at my guide and he goes, oh, we see those all the time. I went, what? What do you mean you see them all the time? And he goes, oh, yeah, we see them, but they're too slow. We can't catch them. So I'm like, okay. So I get home again and I start calling fishery people and looking for a biologist who wants to team up with me to prove these things exist. And so that's what we were doing up when we found the footprints.
Whoa.
So you see how curiosity can, you know, it can do good things. And doesn't necessarily one curiosity thing might lead to some other breakthrough down the line, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It may shift on you. But I kind of believe the universe helps you, you know. It helps the curious. Let's put it that way. So if I'm ever going to be famous for a quote, it's the universe will help the curious. That's it.
That's going to be the name of this episode. Well, and, you know, I wanted to ask you about something that you have. I'm not sure exactly where you are in the process right now, but it's an invention of yours, and it could help those curious about Sasquatch kind of more quietly and efficiently and quickly find them out in the woods. Can you tell us about this e-bike?
Oh, yeah. So I got obsessed with e-bikes only because I'm not obsessed with electric cars because there's a tipping point of efficiency. I know how expensive, dangerous, hard to mine the minerals. But on a bike, because the bikes are so light, it doesn't take a huge battery to propel them, you know, at a pretty quick speed and if you use the right gears. So I got kind of obsessed with building better quality, more silent, far more powerful e-bikes that could tackle mountains and do different things. And then I thought, well, this would be the greatest research tool ever for wildlife researchers in general, let alone Bigfoot researchers, to get in the back 40 quickly, silently, and mount have cameras that come on automatically, fully automatic, where it records the audio and the video front and back while you're driving, and infrared and color, whatever, all automatically it changes. But so there can be no operator failure, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's kind of the problem. Well, I didn't have we were driving. I didn't have my camera on, right? You can't turn them off. So I wire and do everything. So the moment you're using your bike, it's recording whether you want to or not. So you've got to forget about it. And it buffers. You don't have to ever switch memory cards. You're never going to have the memory card full problem. And so I, you know, perfected that. Got rid of a few used ones, built one, like for Todd Neese, wanted one. But I think it's the future. Anybody can build these. I'm always happy to share how to do it. And it's just a matter of, what would I put it? The element of surprise, I think, is huge.
Right.
The silence of these things is crazy. We've had things like bobcats kill prey right in front of the e-bike because they didn't hear it, they didn't see it, because they're silent, you know, and they're not spooked by it. Deer are not. I was actually doing experiments yesterday with deer. Deer are some reason they literally won't budge for an e-bike. They'll stand their ground. They won't even look at you. And if they do look at you, either they're very confused. Because they're used to seeing either visual cues. Imagine how many bikes deer have seen. People pedaling by and blah, 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 blah. And they're used to the sounds. So I really think that if the people who start using these things are going to have great success. There's one guy I know of in Washington that claims he's had like 4 sightings already.
Whoa.
But he didn't have any cameras on his bikes because he was using an e-bike with the proper gearing so he could get up the mountains. And he's had four sightings. He has a channel on YouTube, and you can find, I think if you type in e-bikes and Bigfoot, and he was a pioneer in this too. I found his channel long after I had already gone down that road. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, he was doing the same thing, but he's claiming this is the way to go because, and he tells stories of these amazing encounters that he's had. Because once again, a Bigfoot's going to, you know, they're going to hear ATVs coming, side-by-sides, that four-stroke motor, they're going to hear that. They're not going to hear a thing with these.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to come around a corner on a logging trail or a two-track or a single-track trail. They're going to be standing there, and you're going to be recording. If you take the time to put these cameras, it's like another $150 to do it.
So these are already in use to some extent. You said you would be willing to share with folks how.
Oh, sure, people. I'm happy to share how to do it. Sure.
Awesome. Yep. Yeah. You're very gracious with the information that you share with folks, because I think, you know, you want to help others who are just as curious as you are. Like it makes me think of, you have this really awesome featured segment. I think it's a recent segment that you introduced on your show, the Technological Breakdown.
Yeah.
And that's so cool to like think about all these like little products and items and advice that squatchers, people out in the woods looking for the stuff that could just make their lives and the search so much easier. So yeah, just thank you for being so open.
Yeah, no, it's a challenging thing to do because I take for granted everybody. I kind of think, well, everybody knows this. I'm like, no, they don't. Yeah. And then I think about all the new people getting involved in this, the kids, the teenagers that maybe saw Bigfoot while they were driving with their family to the campgrounds. Suddenly now he's obsessed. He doesn't know anything. So I'm just hoping to put the knowledge out there. A lot of untested ideas I'm throwing out too, you know, but this is cool because now people have new things to test. You know, so it's like I'm hoping to create a whole band of researchers that we can eventually maybe get that footage because there hasn't been any new breakthroughs.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. We're due.
It has. Yes. Well, yes. Overdue.
We are due. You know, we don't know anything about these creatures. We don't know, you know, what spectrums they see in, hear in. You know, what their habits are. We don't know anything about their life cycle. We assume certain things, but I think that's kind of a mistake. The older I'm getting, the more I'm realizing, really, do they migrate south? Because that's what I would do. I would want to be warm in the winter. What if they migrate north? You know, so we need to kind of start going, well, maybe they're not doing what humans do. Maybe they don't think like humans. Maybe they think differently.
Yeah. But it's we can only speculate at this point.
Right, exactly.
Because you're right. Like there are no recent major breakthroughs. And you know, the evidence, it can only go so far, but like we were talking about earlier, you know, there's massive advancements with even just something like just the DNA aspect of evidence and analyzing and testing that. Like, I guess I wonder, do you think with those advancements, newer evidence coming out all the time, like, do you think we will ever prove its existence without a body?
Yeah, I think that we can maybe just stop short of that, but it would be so good where it would raise the bar so high that scientists at that point would get the funding to put it to bed. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I think that at some point, you know, the bar is just going to get raised enough. Like right now, I'm a member of ZooBook. And that reminds me, I missed my last meeting.
Sorry, Amy Boo.
But it's a group of scientists, researchers that can get together, exchange ideas anonymously. And that is, I think there's probably like 40 scientists now.
Wow.
But they're not willing to go public because, yeah, they had an encounter too. Scientists, believe it or not, have encounters too. Police have encounters. Game wardens have encounters. Blah, blah, blah. But that doesn't mean they want to come public. It just gives them a safe spot to exchange information, get information. But, like, in Let You Meet Science, I don't want to brag, but I think I've got some people that come forward, you know, for the show. And that's kind of anytime you get a new scientist come forward and just say, okay, I don't care anymore. That's a big deal, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's a big huge deal. Yeah, because they just add that level of legitimacy, you know, validity.
Well, as a general rule, a private citizen can't get the $5 million grant to do anything, you know? Yeah. Which is why I went turned to TV for my funding, because I knew the government wasn't going to help me. So that's why I turned to television. Yeah. So, but I really encourage people to, you know, just who are interested in this topic, to do whatever they can and just do different things. Don't keep just doing the same old, you know, crazy things that everybody else does. Try to think out of the box.
Yeah, try something different. All right, Doug. Well, our hour is going to slip away from us here. So before we close it out, I really wanted to ask you, because you're such an amazing storyteller, and it was suggested to me that I had to ask you about an Alaskan encounter.
The story I told in the beginning, which wasn't okay. Everybody thinks it's in Alaska. It's Northwest Territories.
Okay.
It's actually even farther north than Alaska. It's way up on the border. So if you go across the border from the U.S. into Canada, you get into like Manitoba or Ontario. It's above that whole province. Okay. Up in the roadless tundra no man's land up in the Arctic. So that's where I was, and that's the story I told you about the footprints.
Okay.
So that's what they were referring to.
Okay. That's
done.
Okay. I got one backup story request to give you, because you don't just talk about Bigfoot. That is not the only mystery that you are involved with, interested in. And you mentioned prior to recording, and I think this is how we will close this episode out, and then I'll ask folks, you know, where you want to send folks online. You mentioned you had a ghost story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Actually, I've got two. One is really quick, but really scary, and it still gives me chills. Middle of the night, 2 a.m, I hear running up our hallway upstairs, you know, bum, bum, like kids running, like just, you know, and I'm picturing in my mind my two daughters, you know, getting goofy on the weekend, playing tag, whatever, you know, how kids are when they have sleepovers or whatever. So I'm hearing this running up and down the hallway, and I'm thinking, what are they doing up? And then I hear a big boom, 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 boom on my door. And I'm like, you know, is that why are they pounding? Why are my daughters pounding on the door? And so I get up, put my robe on, and open the door, and there's nothing in the hallway. And then, but before the pound on my door, I heard pounding on other doors. So now this one, I was kind of getting a little mad. You know, as a parent, I'm like, what in the world is going on? So I start walking down the hall, and I walk to the end, and Dakota's sound asleep. Go into AJ's room, and she's sitting up just shaking, crying. And I'm like, what? She goes, there was something, you know, like dark in her room that had just walked by. And I'm like, did you hear all the ruckus and the pounding on the door? She's like, yes. And I said, that wasn't you pounding on my door. She's no, I haven't, you know, she hadn't gotten out of bed. And then that was the end of it. We've never had an incident like that again. So you wonder, what was that all about?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Why does one enter that paranormal realm for that one evening? And then it's, thank God it goes away.
No, it is odd just to be a one-off. A lot of folks will tell something, a similar kind of story with the wall wrappings or the jumping around, the running up and down. But it seems more like a... What's the word? Where it just repeats. It's like on a loop, you know? Mm-hmm. Not like that. Like, that seems more intelligent to me. That is spooky.
It was really, yeah. And you also wonder, was it some kind of glitch from a time gone by of my kids doing that?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I start thinking about these ghosts and people's sightings. Like, I had a guy come to me recently, a friend, and he said, I just saw my dog that died 2 weeks ago.
Whoa.
And I'm like, well, maybe it was a kind of a time glitch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It may not have been your dog. It was your dog, but maybe it wasn't a ghost of your dog.
Yeah.
It was the reality of your dog. So the one ghost that I did see and had numerous witnesses, which was really cool. Well, we were at a theater. And it was during Christmas, and we were there watching a comedy Christmas movie, not a spooky movie, not what you're gonna expect. You're not in that frame of mind to see a ghost, right? Mm-hmm. And it was like a Jennifer Aniston Christmas comedy, you know. And you're not in that mood. So all of a sudden, I see this guy walk by me, and I thought nothing of it. But the theater wasn't very packed with people. I would imagine there were under 10 people in the theater. So this guy walks by and goes out the door. Think nothing of it. A lot of people got to use the restroom, go get popcorn, get a pop refill, whatever. And then 5 minutes later, here he comes again. But I'm like, I don't recall him coming back in. Because there's no doors up, you know, on the higher part of the theater. So I'm sitting kind of down by the front. 5 minutes later, here he comes again. And I'm starting to pay attention now just a little bit. Like, there's something wrong here. And he goes right out the door. Now, I'm really, at this point, after the third time, I'm paying attention 100%. Now, I'm not even watching the movie. I don't give a damn about the movie anymore. So here he comes again. He just appears. Now, I can't look behind me because, one, people would be really weird if I turned around and just stared at the people sitting behind me. But all of a sudden, the guy just starts coming down the stairs again and out the door. Now, I said, notice what he looked like. He had a green trucker's hat. He had sunglasses on, aviator sunglasses on. And he had a Norwest Bank deposit bag in his hand. And I knew that was the Norwest Bank deposit bag because I used to bank with Norwest back many years ago. And my deposit bag was this green zipper bag, and it had the Norwest Bank logo on it. And I could see that logo on that bag. And the other weird thing is the guy had a smirk on his face because I caught him a couple times as I looked as he was coming down the stairs before he would go out. So he did this about 50 times in this theater.
What?
And we're all, of course, I think everybody now is watching this. Yvette's watching. We're all just like, what? So the movie, I cannot wait for this movie because I'm really want to get, like, what's going to happen. So the movie gets over. I get out in the aisle, let a vet out. And the guy, I turn around. I can feel this weird feeling. And I turn around, and there he is smirking at me. He's got this smirk on his face. And he's got those glasses on and the trucker hat. And then it's that netted kind of just very old 70s hat. Yeah. And he's not an old guy. But he's just, the smirk is just really weird. So we get out the door, and I kind of pull Yvette's side to let him out ahead of, you know, to let him pass us. And so he does that. And the two ticket takers, or the ushers, they look at me and they go, "What's with that guy?" And I went, "Just don't take your eyes off him. Because now this has got to resolve." And the weird thing is that theater's got a curved wall. So if something walks along the wall, they have to exit out because you can then either go into the concession area or leave. Mm-hmm. So we're watching, and we're watching the concession area, and we're watching, and then he walks around the curve, goes out of sight behind the curve. And we're all watching the exit and the concession, and he's gone. So four of us watched, you know, and we made sure there was, you know, he's not there. He disappeared. It freaked everybody out. So that was my one ghost experience. Why, when, and why there, I have no idea. But it was kind of a fun, you know,
thing.
Because it's still a great mystery. But you talk about a pattern. Mm-hmm. Over and over, did he die, you know, on his way to the bank?
And for him to repeat that same maneuver over and over again, same facial expression, but you said something there before you summed up the story where he smirked at you. Was he smirking at you?
I looked him right in the eye. He had sunglasses on, but I turn around and look, and he just had this smirk, this Cheshire Cat smirk, you know, this.
Ugh.
It was really icky. Yeah. And I could feel that. Yeah. I mean, I just could feel the guy. But then later on, I'm like, well, was that like a time glitch of some sort? Or our ghost just time, you know, really made me question. And I've never done ghost research ever. That's one topic I've never done any. Mm-hmm. Never gone on one of those research trips. I've been invited on many, never done one. I don't need to.
Oh man, I think a lot of people would love to get the Doug Hajcek treatment.
Maybe someday, but that was really interesting. I have to admit, I don't know. I can't come up with any other explanation. So that's my story, and I'm going to stick to it.
One of the big mysteries of our universe, you know. It's just, I think you're right. Thinking down the line of, like, you know, time glitches or glitches in the matrix, anything like that, or that even the living can contribute to what we perceive as a glitch, you know, a glitch in the matrix, kind of like we can. I think we are affecting our environments more than we think at this point. And that includes people who have passed on as well. I don't know. Well, there's a lot of...
Well, think about all of the radio signals we're beaming into our atmosphere now. That's mm-hmm. got to affect time.
Absolutely.
It has to. All these frequencies. And so many of them from so many people. That alone. And then the things they're doing now, molecular testing with all these atomic experiments looking for the God particle and this and that and all these things are doing all over the world. And that kind of makes you wonder, are they opening little, you know, little temporary windows and doors or permanent ones? That just makes you think. We'll never know, but there seems to be a lot of weird, you know, activity that, you know, people are seeing in our skies and mm-hmm. seeing in our homes and our houses, and none of us talk, so we don't know really what's going on at our neighbor's house, right?
And it seems to be getting weirder all the time.
It does.
Just exponentially as we move forward. All right, Doug, that was awesome. I love that. We're going to end on that story. I love that. We are at the hour, so I want to ask you, where would you like to send my listeners online to learn more, to follow you? Where do you want to send them?
Well, certainly love people to check out the Untold Radio Network on YouTube or anywhere podcasts are found. I personally do a show every Wednesday at 7 o'clock Central, 8 o'clock Eastern, and I do a tech breakdown in each show. You can check out Untold Radio AM on YouTube, but you know, you can check out Hangar One Publishing because our books are different. We have audio and video in our print books, kind of Harry Potter like. And it's the first change that's ever happened in publishing in hundreds of years is what we're doing with our books. And so it's worth maybe checking out our IBT technology and we're having a blast doing all this and getting cool info to people out. And I guess that would be it. People can get a hold of me on Facebook.
All right. And to close out our episode, would you like to leave us with any final thoughts, words of wisdom, or a piece of advice?
No, but if you're into any type of research of any type, just remember this. Whatever it will be, if it's successful, will be multi-step.
Producer, researcher, inventor, innovator, Doug Hajcek, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you so much, Doug, for taking the time to join me on the show and share your knowledge and thoughts with my audience. It was incredible getting to speak with you. Listeners, please check out the links in the show notes to learn more and to follow my guest. And please consider kicking in for that Kickstarter. Legend Meets Science was outstanding. I don't need to tell you that. You already know it. You saw it. So we've got to help get Legend Meets Science 2 out into the world. Not just because I personally desperately want to see it, but the world needs this kind of information. Needs it. It's a necessity. If you enjoyed hearing from Doug today, got a hankering for more, you can, of course, as well you should, go check out his show, Untold Radio AM. He streams live every week, has amazing guests, his son does it with him. It's excellent. Go give it a watch and a listen. But if you would like to hear more from my chat with Doug, there is more to be heard. Following our conversation, Doug joined me backstage and told me a wild story about an interaction he and his wife had with a creature. It wasn't Bigfoot. I'm not giving anything else away, but it was wild. If you would like to catch that and the rest of my backstage guest chat collection, run, don't walk, to patreon.com/ParanormGirlPod. I got tiers from $1 to $10. You can enjoy exclusive content and early access to all episodes and feel proud to support a show that you adore. Another way to support the show is by following at ParanormGirlPod on social and subscribing to the PGP YouTube channel. For my audience viewing this one on YouTube, there's an Easter egg in the credits for you. Keep your eyes peeled. Finally, I would like to give a heartfelt thank you to one of my patrons and a friend I somehow made in all of this Bigfoot chaos. He has been so incredibly supportive this season. He's always quick to help whenever it's needed, whatever it is. And he also helped me out with today's show in a big, big way. Thank you so much, Dwayne. I appreciate you. That is going to do it. Tune in next week to catch the final deep dive into Sasquatch, to be followed by the season 6 finale. Almost there, you guys. I'll see you back here on Tuesday. Stay safe, keep the nightlight on, and sleep with one eye open.
Just got a free coffee with my EarnaFi points.
Your what?
The points I get with the new EarnaFi app from BP and Amoco. I got 250 for signing up and more every time I fill up or buy anything in the C-store.
Oh, can you use points for fuel?
Of course.
And discounts and deals?
On anything.
Oh, like chips?
Mm-hmm.
Sodas?
You got it.
The actual slushy machine.
Only what's actually for sale. But you do get double the points for the first 90 days. Just go to EarnaFiRewards.com to download the app.
Available at participating locations only. App content is subject to change.